gentlemen, welcome to episode number 7 of Nobody Safe, the Brady Labor Podcast. I'm Brady Labor, and I'll be your host for this listening experience. First of all, I want to thank you for listening wherever you may be, and hopefully you will either be entertained or just frustrated enough to the point that you can't stop listening. Today, my guest is former All-American basketball player at Thomas More University and current assistant coach at Bellarmine University, Abby Owings. Abby first came onto my radar as a high school point guard at Simon Kenton High School in Independence, Kentucky. Despite her lack of height, this kid was incredibly skilled and a natural-born leader that her teammates gravitated to while she was playing for head coach Jeff Stowers. Abby went on to have an illustrious and decorated career in college at Thomas More, where she was a key member of 2 national championship teams and is now an up-and-coming young assistant coach working her way up the ladder. Here's my conversation with Abby Owings. Today, my guest is a 2-time national champion, 3-time All-American, former PAC Player of the Year, and just recently was named to the D3 All-Decade Team, and she's a current assistant coach at Bellarmine University. Abby Owings, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brady. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Well, so am I. Of course, you're a local Northern Kentucky kid, just like I am. It's just you're half my age, so I can still call you a kid and not be disrespectful. A lot of folks know you, at least in the beginning, growing up in Independence, Kentucky, in Kenton County, and you played at Simon Kenton High School. So did you come up in their feeder system growing up before you made it to high school? I think that'd be South Kenton, maybe?
They had a Kenton County league, per se. I went to Twin Hopple Middle School and just kind of went on there, but there was no like AAU or feeder program other than like a little Pioneer League, if you will.
So you end up at Simon Kenton, and that is a place that is run right now on the girls basketball side by Jeff Stowers, a Hall of Fame college basketball player and a heck of a coach. Not an easy guy to play for. Talk about coach. Right. And it's for a reason. He's clearly preparing you guys with his culture to go on to the next level. Talk about coach and playing for him.
It was probably the toughest 4 years I've ever had as a player, just because he wants to prepare you the best way that he can. And sometimes that's just with tough love. Mm-hmm. And as a 14 to 18 year old kid, you know, you just think that he's picking on you or he's just hard on you for no reason. And the roller coaster goes up and down and up and down. But I'm so grateful for him, because when I stepped foot on Thomas More's campus for the first time as a freshman, I realized how tough I was mentally, how tough I was physically. And, you know, he never, ever let the gas pedal off. Like, he was always on me from the time I got there as a freshman until I graduated. But still so thankful for him, because, and I truly believe I don't know if I would have made it this far without him and all he's done for me in my career.
You know, he's got an outstanding staff there as well. And of course, his son Brendan has been on and off the staff because he's had opportunities to coach in college as well. Was he there during any of your 4 years in high school?
He was not.
Okay.
He was, I believe at the time, he was a graduate assistant at Xavier. We actually, my freshman year, Coach Stowers just added on Loretta Olmstead to our staff. So I got to experience 4 years with Loretta, who was very helpful for me. And also just getting recruited in college. You know, I grew up an only child. So, you know, I didn't have the brothers and sisters to get recruited, and I didn't even really know how to get recruited. So she really helped me with that part of it.
You know, you talk about those teams that you played on, very talented teams, and you guys were kind of stuck in the 8th region, which is weird, because in Kenton County, you had teams in the 8th, 9th, and 10th region, and you guys were kind of stuck in the 8th region, and you guys kept, you know, during your time, Anderson County was a really good team, and they stood in the way of you guys, you know, winning a region championship a couple times, and they had a couple players that ended up going to college, Ariel McKee and Mackenzie Cann. Just talk about your team and your teammates and those battles you had with Anderson County.
I was really fortunate because I pretty much played with the same group of girls my whole 4 years at Simon Kenton. When I graduated, there were six of us that graduated together. So we were all best friends too. I always make the joke because I didn't really have any friends outside of the girls that I played with. And we were super close, but that experience was cool just because being in the eighth region, I knew that I didn't have to go against the Ryles and the Notre Dames at the time were really good. The new cast, that region was locked and loaded. So I just knew that going into the eighth region that we really just had to get past Walton Verona and Anderson County. We fell short every time we made it to the finals, but Anderson County had a great team, like you said, Mackenzie Cann, Ariel McKee, who I fortunately got to play with on the Kentucky All-Star team my junior and my senior year. It's funny, like you hate them while you're going against them, but when they're on your team, you're like, okay, yeah, let's rock and roll, let's go. So my teammates at SK, they still mean the world to me. One of them just got married a couple weekends ago, so it was really cool to just see all of them again and just to know that we had a common bond through basketball and we can still be close to this day.
Yeah, I'm probably sometimes crying about coach being on you too hard. You needed somebody to lean on, and those girls were there for you.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversations about the coach for sure, but I was definitely thankful I had them to lean on, like you said. So
So did you said when you were a younger girl, you didn't do too much AAU or any at all. Did you do that in high school? Did you play grassroots level at that point?
I got started as a I think a fifth or sixth grader. I played on like a sports of all sorts, league type team. And then when I got to middle school, I finally started playing with an AAU team per se. And I got to play with Coach Buddy Pittman, who's pretty familiar or pretty well known in Northern Kentucky. He had a program called the Shining Stars. I played with them pretty much all throughout middle school and high school, and it was really cool. I got to play with Nikki Kiernan, who ended up being my college teammate, and Michaela Ware also, who was my college teammate. So that was my experience playing AAU. It was really cool just because I had never, been. I'll be honest with you. When I was growing up, we didn't go outside of Kentucky, Cincinnati area. So when I got to play AAU, going to Florida, going to North Carolina, and just some of these places I've never seen, and then getting to play in front of college coaches. I was never really starstruck by that, but it was just cool to, be warming up and there's coaches on the baseline, watching you play. So it was really cool.
Yeah, and it seems like that's where a lot of kids get recruited nowadays is through grassroots, because a coach can go to an event and see many different players as opposed to just go to a singular game during the regular season. You're finding that out now in your coaching career once you are able to get on the road full time. Talk about that, the recruiting process. Well, first of all, the elephant in the room here is that you're not very tall. Okay, can we admit that?
Yeah,
Okay, you're. I was going to say, so they listed you at Thomas More being 5'2". First question is that your legitimate height?
I might be like 5'1.5", but
okay, so it's pretty close.
I'll just round up. Yeah, that's
Okay, well, usually they round up like 2 and 3 inches. So if you would have told me 4'11", I would have said, hey, that's fair in the basketball world, because it's felonious. But if they only gave you 1/2 inch, I think you got shortchanged, no pun intended.
That might be true. That might be true.
They should have got you to 5'4", right?
I'll take 5'2". You know what? That's what I am, and I don't want to. I
Right
just
on.
when someone puts 5'2" on the scouting report, I want to be walk out there and be like, okay, she's 5'2". So.
Right. I mean, you were a fantastic player. I watched you in high school a couple times. I knew you were special, and I thought, God, if this kid was only 5 or 6 inches taller, and even then, that's kind of short for Division I. So with that obstacle, you obviously made up for all that with your hard work and your tenacity. But the recruiting process, did that limit the schools that wanted to look at you, or just talk about the recruiting process and even if it's the good, bad, and the ugly, if whatever it is you want to share, because it's not always a pretty picture, obviously.
Yeah. Like I said, I was just kind of unfamiliar with what the recruiting process was in general. And I was thankful that I had Coach Olmstead at Simon Kenton to kind of help me with that. But, I had the dream per se to play at the Kentuckys and the Tennessees. And when I was in the seventh grade, my dad painted my room Tennessee Vol orange.
Oh,
So
wow.
Yeah, so like I had dreams to play at that level. And even in as a freshman and sophomore in high school, like I wanted to play Division I basketball. That's what I wanted to do. But when I got into my junior and my senior year, just having more conversations with Coach Buddy Pittman, Coach Olmstead, and Coach Dowers, they kind of painted the picture for me like, hey, let's try D2. Let's look at NAI. Let's look at D3, you know. And Coach Hands at the time was, he had been on me for a while. I would say probably from my sophomore year on, you know, to my senior year. So I didn't get the offers per se. And I'll be honest with you, I probably had 3 offers coming out of high school, Georgetown. And then I don't know if you say Thomas More's an offer because it's technically, it was a D3 school at the time. Mm-hmm. So I had to pay to go to school. But I had Georgetown, you know, Asbury and Otterbein, all, you know, small schools. But you know what? I was okay with it. It was just what it was. I couldn't change how tall I was. So I just kind of said, hey, you know what? I'm gonna choose to go to Thomas More. I knew the team was really good, and I just knew that I could make an impact right away. So I chose to go to Thomas More and further my academic and my athletic career.
You know, and that's part of it. Sometimes it's all about the fit. And what Jeff Hands is, he's just always amazed me. What he's been able to do is, with a D3 program, pretty much come up with a Northern Kentucky high school all-star team. Yeah. He's got most of the best players. Some of them, like you said, you could have went somewhere else. And I know there's a couple of players that, you know, that you played with, they could have went other places and got money. And when I mean money, that's the short term for scholarship opportunities. Absolutely. You know, not anything nefarious. You have to clear that up. But yeah, you could have went somewhere and got some scholarship money, and you chose that situation at Thomas More because of their atmosphere, their culture. Kind of talk about that. What's the selling point other than knowing that you got a really good chance to win right away, and in your case, play right away?
I think, and Brady, you can kind of, you know, help me here, but going into a game at Thomas More, a women's game, pretty much sold out every night.
Yeah.
You know, so when you walk in there, it's small college basketball, but people in Northern Kentucky love Thomas More. So going in there as a recruit and seeing all the fans there and I'm not bashing on the teams, you know, that we played, but going in there for all, you know, seeing all the fans for a 40-point win and just, you know, those guys still go crazy when we're scoring baskets and getting stops and stuff, you know, I wanted to play under those lights. I wanted to be coached by Coach Hands. I wanted to play with Sidney Moss. You know, I wanted to play with the players that I knew, you know, at the time I was going to play with. And then, you know, I didn't really know Devin Beasley and Katie Kitchen very well. They were seniors when I was a senior in high school, but they did a really good job in selling Thomas More to me and the culture. You know, it's different. When you walk in there, it's like it's a culture that, you know, you'll just never forget when you walk out. It's just, it hits you differently. And I really think that's accredited to Coach Hands and what he's built there and who he's recruited into his program, and the kind of people he's recruited into his program. It's just a special place. And I really couldn't turn away from it, especially with it being in my backyard. There's nothing like my family being able to come watch me on game nights and my friends. And it's just, it's a really, really special atmosphere.
Yeah, the Connor Convocation Center for a women's basketball game. It's, yeah, you have to really be there to understand it. And it's funny, and it's nothing against the men's program, because you all play doubleheaders where you guys are first, they're second. That's usually the traditional thing. But it's very rarely that you'll have a big crowd for a women's game and then people kind of evacuate the building for the men's. It's usually the opposite. And that has got to be something that, I mean, that sucks for the guys, obviously. But for you guys, that's got to let you know, hey, man, there's a reason for this. You know, we're Thomas More. We hang banners and all that stuff. So, you know, obviously that had to be a selling point as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I was, to be honest with you, I was confused when I went, because I went for like a Wednesday night game. I was like, okay, this is weird. Like, why is everybody clearing up, you know, and then they're getting ready to play. But I was like, wow, you know, like the fans came to watch the girls, and it was awesome.
So let's talk about Jeff Hands. Obviously, that's a program. When I first started coming around as a media member, Brian Neal was the head coach, and he was really building something special. And then, which, you know, that Xavier came calling and they hired him. because of the success he'd had at Thomas More. Then Jeff Hands comes in, and I knew him as an assistant coach at Northern Kentucky.
Yeah.
And he takes it to another level when everybody's like, wow, they didn't think it'd get any better than that. And that's talk about him and, you know, playing for a guy like him. He's similar to Jeff Stowers. He's a tough guy to play for, and it's not for everybody. And obviously it was something, an environment you were able to flourish in.
Yeah, Coach Hands. Him and I have had our ups and downs for sure. But I can honestly say, like, my relationship with him is second to none. You know, I think the world of him. He's like a second dad to me. But, you know, mainly because I wanted to have that relationship with him. I would go into his office before class and just be like, hey, coach, what's up? Or just, you know, pick his brain about something. Or what do you want to do in practice today? You know, how's Kiera? How's Kaylin, his kids? You know, just this casual conversation. And it's solely just because I wanted to be close with him. And I think, and now as I'm a coach, I realize how special that point guard and that coach relationship is, that head coach relationship is, per se. And, you know, it goes down the line, obviously, but I just wanted to, for him to trust me. And I just tried every day to just make it a point to build that relationship. And he's a phenomenal basketball coach. He taught me so much about the game, about life. You know, I always know that I can pick up the phone and call him at any point and he'd answer and he'd help me with anything. You know, he's a tough person to play for as well. But again, I don't know that I sit in the seat I do now at Bellarmine without him, because he taught me things that I will take with me forever. He's just a really good person all in all. He's not for everybody, like you said, and there's a lot of people probably out there that would disagree with what I'm saying right now, but also they probably didn't take the time to have a relationship with him like I do. Like I did, and like some of my teammates did. And so that's just where the respect comes from. And, you know, I always think every place that I've been so far, it's like, you know, the players want to have good relationships with their coaches. They want to be able to trust them. And sometimes it just takes you walking into the office and saying, hey, how's your day? Or, hey, look what I did today in school, or like whatever the case may be. If you want to have that relationship, sometimes it's on you. That's what I got to say about him. I mean, he's an awesome, awesome coach, and I'm glad he's still there, you know, hanging banners and doing what he does.
Yeah. I've gotten to know him over the last few years. I've always kind of known him. Like I said, I met him at Northern Kentucky. He's definitely got an open door policy. Sometimes when you walk through that door, though, you might not want to hear what he's got to say. And that's the tough part about being a coach. And you're probably starting to find that out now, is you're the person that's got to tell somebody some things they might not want to hear.
Absolutely.
And
that's the tough part about coaching. You know, it's very black and white. There's no dancing around anything. If you want to get results, then you got to tell the players what exactly that they need to do, you know, and if you don't like it, well, I'm sorry. That's just what it is.
Well, let's talk about some results here. Freshman year, you guys go on a run, obviously 33-0 season. You win a national championship. I mean, you're probably, there's a lot of sayings for that. My dad used to say, you're farting through silk. You know, how do you know that this is going to be like this forever? Right. You had and it was, you know, fantastic team. Clearly, you got into the starting lineup very early, maybe even day one, but, you know, a really good group there. You talked about Sydney Moss being on that team. She had come to the school a year earlier, and I guess they were in the Elite Eight before she gets hurt, and that pretty much wrecks their chance, because they were pretty much penciled in as the number one contender and the favorite for the D3 National Championship. But along with her, you know, and yourself, you had Sydney Wainscott, Alexis Santa Maria, Sam Cady, and then you're bringing some nice players off the bench as well. You talked about Nikki Kiernan, Olivia Huber, and KP, Kristen Paul. That's a pretty nice lineup to be wheeling out there on a daily basis, and that's probably why some folks in the PAC were really not looking forward to seeing Thomas More come to town. Yeah. Just talk about that group your first year, and when do you get to the point where you realize, wow, we've got a chance to really make a deep run?
I could tell pretty early, just because of the culture that we had and the bond that we had. Sydney Wainscott was a senior when I was a freshman, and she was also a senior at Simon Kenton when I was a freshman at Simon Kenton. So her leadership really kind of paved the way for us in getting to that national championship game in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Throughout the year, you know, I just noticed that the guy next to me wanted it more than I did. And so when you have that bond and that culture in your program, you know, good things are expected to come from that. So we just went to war every day in practice, in games, and I knew that they had my back, and I sure as hell had theirs, you know. And it's funny, you know, Sydney's, you know, this great player, national player of the year, but she's also the most humble player on our team. And she wants to get everybody the shots, and she wants to be this great teammate. And I'm so thankful that she was like that, because, you know, we don't get anywhere without her, but also she is a great teammate. So, you know, we all wanted to play hard for her and get her the ball and get open for her when she was getting double, tripled, and quadruple teamed, you know. So those are just some of the, you know, the greatest memories I have of that team. And really it was just the leadership of Sydney and also Stephanie Cruising, who was a senior during that year as well.
Yeah, that was a special team. And yeah, talk about Sydney Moss. I think a lot of people, you know her story, but don't really know, you know, she's the daughter of Randy Moss, NFL wide receiver, and she goes to Florida for a year, SEC freshman of the year. And she decides to come, wants to come back closer to home. And she decides on coming to Thomas More for the simple fact that she wanted to graduate in 4 years, which meant school was important. Therefore, Division I schools were out of the question. When it came down to it, she could have went to Northern Kentucky. She could have went to UC or Xavier or whatever, but she ends up at Thomas More. You guys literally got a legit Division I All-American who just walks onto your campus. And a lot of you guys already knew her. You probably played against, you know, some of the older girls probably played against her in high school. And now she's your teammate. I mean, yeah. That's got to be a pretty outstanding feeling for them. I was, of course, the year before you got there, but knowing you got this stud on your team, it's got to be a pretty good feeling to have that in your back pocket, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when in doubt, we went inside to sit.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, she's so talented. You know, she can play 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, you know. But, like, that's the thing about Sydney is that you would never know that just having a conversation with her, because she's so humble. And, you know, I just remember her telling me, like, hey, they're going to double me hard. Like, get open, you know, get open, because I'm going to pass it to you. And so, you know, just hearing those words from her as a freshman and a sophomore, it's like, wow, you know, she trusts me. And like, that's what type of person she is. She's tremendous. You know, I talked to her last week. You know, we're still really close friends, and she's actually back at Thomas More. So mm-hmm. I'm really happy for her and getting to be back there. And just really thankful that, she's a friend of mine.
Yeah, she's a good kid. And that's the thing. I think as talented as she was, I think her best attribute was her passing, because she threw some incredible passes when you guys were open. Let's just talk about that Final Four run. Going to Grand Rapids, and this is the place where Thomas More had kind of knocked on the door a couple times. And the knock on them mm-hmm. early on was, well, yeah, they can only get so far. And then they stall out in the NCAA tournament. But with your group, well, it started the year before, obviously. Sydney gets hurt, and that kind of derails things. But this group, everybody's healthy, everybody's bought in, and you're almost there. Was it at that point, were you guys nervous not to screw it up, or were you just so confident that it didn't matter who was stepping in front of you?
I just think we were focused on our goal, you know. I don't know that if – I mean, I was a freshman point guard, so yeah, I was nervous as hell. You know, I was like, I don't want to screw this up. I don't want to be the one who screws this up. But I think Coach Hands, our leaders, our captains, they did a really good job of just keeping us in the moment. Shoot around by shoot around, practice by practice, game by game, you know. That it's just one thing at a time, you know. And I think that's how we got to where we wanted to be, which was – you know, being a national champion by just taking it easy and taking things, not taking it easy, but, you know, taking things one thing at a time. So it was just the focus.
At the end, you guys win, you beat Calvin College. And I don't know if they were doing this at the time, but where, you know, the confetti all comes from the ceiling or from somewhere, you finally accomplished the goal. mm-hmm. and you're a freshman. I guess it doesn't matter if you're a freshman, senior, or an old man like me who just happens to make the trip. That's a special feeling for sure. What was going through your veins when the clock hit zero and boom, there's no more games to play and you're the last team to win a game to end their season?
I'll tell you, the first thing I thought of when the buzzer went off was I wanted to find Coach Hans to see if he was smiling because he never smiles. And so I was like, you know, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? And then I looked down at the end of the bench and he just grinning ear to ear. And his wife and his kids came down and they were all hugging or whatever. But that was just my initial thought, like, you know, is he happy? You know, because like he's so focused and he's so competitive all year long. And it was just a good feeling to see him, you know, relax and be like, we did it. And so after that, I just remember like we all had a common goal. We all went to battle for each other. And here we are celebrating the national championship. You know, we're the best of the best in Division III. We didn't lose a single game that year. So just knowing that we all did it together. And some of those girls all of those girls really are my best friends to this day. So it was really cool.
Now, not to turn the mood down or whatever, but at the end of your freshman year, at some point your mom is sick. She's got cancer, and that's really tough to obviously go through. And she ends up losing the battle with it. And when did she first get diagnosed? I mean, how long were you dealing with that and your family and her fighting to try to survive that awful illness? You know, is that like a cloud over you almost? Did that make basketball an escape? I know your mom really enjoyed watching you play, clearly. I mean, you said you're an only child, so she probably focused her life around you, which at some points, you know, as a coach is a sickness that you've got to cure people of, but clearly it's okay. So how long was she battling during the course of this time for you?
She was diagnosed going into my freshman year of high school.
Okay, so it had been a little while.
Yeah. It was funny because the doctor said that she'd be lucky to live like a year and a half. And she looked back at the doctor and she's like, no, like I'm going to see my only kid graduate from high school. And so she did. She lived 5.5 years. And like you said, she passed away going into my sophomore year of college. And it was right around when basketball was starting. It was October 7th. So basketball usually starts October 15th. So going through kind of a lot during that time, just with all the emotions of starting basketball and dealing with a loss of my mom. But during those years, you know, I really used basketball as an outlet. And it was just something that I looked forward to doing because it was my getaway from the world. It was my getaway from everybody and everything and what was going on. And it's something I just love to do, you know, and I'll be honest with you, and my family could probably, and my friends say, oh, you were really selfish. Like you spent more time in the gym than you did with your mom or whatever it was, but they didn't realize like the sacrifices I was making to be a great basketball player. Like my mom wanted me to be, you know, she always, our thing was always be great. And so she knew when she was getting really sick what was going to happen, and I knew it too. We just didn't really have that conversation. So I think that was, anytime she said be great, I think that was her way of saying, hey, like, it's my time. Like, you got to go do your thing. You know, you got to put your time in the gym. You got to be the best basketball player and the best person you can be every day. And so I was so thankful that I had the sport of basketball to turn to during that time, because it really, mentally, it helped me get through a lot of things. And, you know, as a basketball player in general, college athlete, there's a lot of highs and lows. You know, you can have a really good practice and feel on top of the world, and then you can come in the next day and not hit a shot in the game and feel as low as the ground. And it's just, it's a lot of up and down, you know, things. But I think, you know, just putting as much time as I did into it really helped prepare me just to be, you know, an All-American, to win national titles. And my mom, you know, kind of instilled that greatness in me and that passion. And that pride of doing something you love every day.
Sure. And make no mistake about it, she's smiling down on you, even though she was obviously, she saw you graduate high school and she saw you win the first of two national championships. So that's something to be proud of. And that gets us into sophomore year. Obviously it happens right before, you know, your mom passes right before the start of the season. So what did you do? Did you just immerse yourself even further into basketball after that, or was there some sort of period where you wasn't sure you wanted to do this? I mean, there's got to be a lot floating around a 19-year-old girl's head when that happens. So what was basketball still your outlet?
Oh, absolutely. I actually, the day she passed away, I went to class that day. I had class she passed away like 8 o'clock in the morning. I had 11 o'clock class. So I went to class. We had open gym, I think, the following night. And so I went and I was like, you know what? I there's nothing I can do about it anymore. What happened. And she would be really upset with me if I stayed home and I cried and I wasn't doing what I love to do. So I just turned to basketball again. You know, it's always just that one thing that I know is consistent in my life, no matter what. And so, like I said, I was at open gym and now I was hanging out with my friends afterwards. You know, it was just another day, really. I mean, it sucks that it happened, but, she, like I said, she would be been really upset with me if I would have not resumed my life.
Well, that's good. You didn't disappoint her, because you probably would be hearing from her with, I'm sure there's some sort of signs. She would have definitely said, you know, there'd be a kick in your butt somewhere along the line. So, yeah. That's good to hear. Sophomore year, back on the floor. You guys did it once. Why not repeat? 33-0 again. And quite frankly, I thought that was an even better team. I mean, I came and covered a few of your games, and I know the first thing I noticed is, well, coach has a platoon system, and it's not just two platoons. He's got three. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and of course, as the season moves on, he narrows his rotation, obviously, like any coach does. But I mean, you had players in your second platoon that could have started anywhere, not just in the PAC, but at other schools. And again, it's that buy-in to want to go there and be a part of something special. You know, what an outstanding group that was. Really, you not only have a national championship team, but you add another kid in Madison Temple, mm-hmm. who I thought was a legit D1 talent. She was a legit high-level D2 talent and probably a mid-major D1. And there she is, a 6-foot point guard, walking into the door at the Connor Convocation Center to join you and Sydney Moss. I mean, you guys must have been thinking, wow, this is some sort of pro team going on here, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, you know, when Coach told us that – or I think he – myself and Sydney were – He told us first that he was able to get Madison, and we started looking at each other like, oh yeah, it's about to go down. So she did a phenomenal job. Obviously, you know, it ended her playing career as a national player of the year. So that just tells you right there, you know, we had, you know, Nikki, Sam, Lex, Madison, Sydney, Olivia Huber, who was, in my opinion, one of the best six men in the country, you know. So those guys, that just, the talent was just really off the charts in a sense. And we always used to say to each other, like, we're going against the best team in the country every day at practice. You know, our top five are going against the second top five in the country every day at practice. And that's really what it was. And I can only imagine, because, you know, now I'm coaching, I can only imagine what it was like for Coach Hands to, you know, be in those practices and coaching us and being like, you know, wow, this is really cool. And just to know that he put that team together, that's awesome. But that group of girls is special. I like I said, I still talk to all of them today. And I'm just so thankful they're my friends.
And of course, you All-America honors for you and for Sydney Moss. And you end up going and playing in the Final Four national championship. You go to Bankers Life Fieldhouse, where the Indiana Pacers play. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's big time to win a championship, regardless of whether it's out in the asphalt or anywhere else, right? But you're in an NBA arena. That had to be pretty cool to just be on the floor and do a shoot around there. But you guys actually played and won a championship there. Talk about, was there had to be some sort of awe factor when you guys showed up there the first time and just looked around and go, wow, this isn't like what we're used to.
Absolutely. I mean, walking out into an arena and just like being able to make a full circle of just seats, you know, I think that's just, oh my gosh, like we're playing in an arena, you know, this is where it's at right here. And because, you know, we're used to playing in gyms similar to Thomas More, you know, like one, two sides of bleachers and just let's roll the balls out, let's go, you know. So to walk in there, we had a shoot around one day, and it's I don't know if you've talked to any former players or anything, but it's different to shoot in an arena like that than it is to have, you know, a wall on the back.
Yeah, it's all about the depth perception for shooters.
That's correct. So I think at first we were all like not shooting well at all, you know, and shoot around, we're missing the, you know, by landslides and stuff. And I was like, oh, maybe this won't go so well, but we figured it out. So, but that was cool. Just to play there. And it was actually D1, D2, and D3 all did, all the championships were hosted there. So just to know that, like, we were playing on the same floor as UConn and, you know, and Gina Auriemma watched their game, you know, in the national championship. So that was just so cool. And, you know, for us D3 kids, you know, we never got to experience anything like that. So it was awesome.
You're two for two, right? 2 years, two championships, got to be outstanding. You move into your junior year, but Sydney Moss has moved on. She's graduated, and now you're going to be pretty much the focus. You're the focal point, not only as the point guard, but you're the veteran, you know, the leading scorer. Of course, Madison Temple's there to help, among others. Jeff did something that I thought was interesting, is he decided to move you off the ball and have you be the shooting guard as a junior to give Michaela Ware an opportunity, probably the only teammate you've ever had that was shorter than you, or maybe the same size, right? You guys are, you're comparing at the 5'1.5" mark, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she was a fantastic athlete. I mean, I watched her play all three sports in high school. So obviously she earned her spot, but so she's running the point and you're the shooting guard. And obviously you're having to run around and they're setting picks for you to get open, and you're just knocking them down like it's your job. And then if they did come out and guard you, it seemed like you'd step back in another foot, and just, it was incredible. Your range, that's something you didn't necessarily get to show off the first 2 years. How much fun was that for you to be the featured offensive option?
Well, it's stressful, I'll tell you that much. but no, honestly, like I don't get those open shots. I don't get those opportunities if, one, I don't, Coach Hans doesn't put me in that position to do so. And then two, my teammates don't set good screens and Michaela doesn't give me a good pass, you know, it right in my shooting pocket to make it, you know. I can't sit up here and say that, you know, I was the guy that year, because I wouldn't have been able to be that person if it wasn't for them. No one ever compliments the girl that sets the screen for the girl that makes the shot, you know.
That's true.
So that's, for me, like, that's what it was. I can't take any credit for that, because that was all them for sure.
Well, when you kept stepping back further and further, that's a little bit on you. So, I mean, you're being humble and I get it, but
you just,
yeah.
You say a prayer and hope it goes in. So.
Exactly. That's what I would be doing. That's for sure. But, you know, you had a great season individually. Obviously, you're the PAC player of the year, first team All-American, and you've got a really nice squad, probably some transition period without Sydney. But, you know, unfortunately, that season came up a little bit short. You guys got upset. You were hosting the regional and get beat at home, and that's something that hadn't happened in a few years. Although you've got all this great success, I hope you guys didn't think that was a black mark on your record, because, you know, you can't just win every year, even though you guys had done that up until that point. Yeah. But that had to be, you know, that had to be upsetting. But it did give you something to work for going into your senior year, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was heartbreaking. I think I cried so hard that night. I felt like, you know, when you lose, you feel like it's your fault, you know. And I know my teammates felt the same way, like, oh, this is my fault. And Coach Hans had to wear a lot of it on him too. So, you know, we all took a lot of credit just for that loss. But it was my first college career loss too. So that there was a lot of emotion behind that. But it fueled the fire. But let's just put it that way. I think the following year, my senior year, we made it a point that, you know, we were going to get back to the Final Four. You know, our hashtag my senior year was the get back, and it was just the journey to get back to the Final Four. But do we do that without losing the hope, you know, the year that we did, you know? So I just, it's easy to look at it in a negative light, but looking back at it now, I'm kind of glad that it happened, because I think it motivated all of us in a special way.
Yeah. So senior year comes up. This is the, for folks, I hadn't been using timestamps like I should have, 2017-2018 season. It's your senior year. You moved back to point guard. I guess Michaela, is that the year she blew her knee out and could not play?
Yeah.
So Michaela's on the shelf, and you're back to the original point guard spot. But, you know, Madison Temple's really starting to come into her own as a dynamic player. Of course, the reason she ended up on the D3 level was because she had gone through multiple knee injuries in high school, and she was probably 100% healthy for the first time that season. Talk about playing with her, and when she's really, you know, at her 100% best, what kind of player that is to be sharing the floor with.
We were playing in against Hope my senior year at their place in the Elite Eight game. I told Coach, I said, just let her bring the ball down the floor. Like, they can't stop her right now, you know. So as a scorer, you know, it took a lot of pressure off me, because Madison was just having this breakout year. You know, she's, whether I'm option one and she's option two, or she's option one and I'm option two, you know, one of us is going to get the job done. So it was more so Madison that year than it was me. And she really turned it on, and I'm so thankful that she did. I mean, she could do things that I couldn't even think about doing, just because of her height and her ability to get to the rim, and just her length in general. So she's special. She's a special player, and I'm glad she started to turn it on, really, you know, my senior year. We couldn't have got to the Final Four without her.
Yeah, so you do return. This time you guys go to Rochester, Minnesota, but you fall to Amherst, just short of your goal. But still, not many folks get to, you know, go to the Final Four. You went there three times. Still, that's a huge accomplishment. But at the same time, that final game, when you know that whether you've win or not, mm-hmm. it's that final game, and you know you got to take that jersey off for the last time. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was going – the emotion, do you just keep the jersey on and ride home with it, or back to the hotel? I mean, what's going through your mind? Because you'd played basketball your entire life.
Right.
And your career as a player is pretty much over, because I didn't know if you were going to try to go the pro route or not. You know, you can share that. But that's still – even if you were going to try to go pro – college and high school and all that success, that's got to be something that weighs on you pretty heavy, like it does everybody when they know it's over.
Yeah, it took me a long time to take it off, the jersey, just because, you know, so much went on in my 4 years at Thomas More that it was more than basketball at that point. You know, it was the teammates, it was the relationships, it was the memories, it was all that we accomplished together. It was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, early nights, you know, I'm sorry, late nights, early mornings. It's just something that, like, it was hard to do. And I was so thankful that I chose to go to Thomas More, and be a part of a powerhouse. You know, it's not every day that, like you said, people don't get to go and play in three Final Fours. Most people don't get to win national championships. You know, I get to stand up here and tell people today that I won national titles. And that's something that a lot of people don't get to do. I was just thankful. I was really thankful. I remember getting off the plane, coming home from Minnesota, and Coach Hans kind of wrapped his arms around me on our way to the buses or whatever, and said, "Hey, like, I'm so happy you chose to come in Thomas More. Now we got to find you a job." I was like, "That's okay. This is reality now. Now I've got to go find a job." But to answer your questions about playing professionally, I had thought about it just a little bit, but I wanted to coach. That was just my main focus, really. And it was funny, you know, as a high school player, my focus was to be the best player I could be. And in college, my focus was to be the best leader I could be. And that's because you know, one, I just wanted to do that for my team, but two, like I knew I wanted to coach, you know, so I got to be able to lead myself. I got to be able to lead a team. And so that was just, you know, my focus. And I never really could think of doing anything else besides coaching. So there wasn't really the ball stopped bouncing at that point. We'll just put it that way.
Well, it's not a glamorous life to break into the coaching business, especially on the college level. Did you think about getting a teaching degree and maybe go back to Simon Kenton and help out there? Or were you focused, okay, I embrace the college culture. That's what I want to do. That's how I want to give back. What was going through your mind? Because it's easy to change your mind a million times when you're getting ready to finally get out there in the real world, quote unquote.
No, it was always college. That was kind of the focus. And I did a program at the Final Four my senior year, the Division I Final Four. It's called So You Want to Be a Coach. And basically they select players from D1, D2, D3 that are seniors that want to get into the profession. And they just do this, you know, 3-day workshop, and you get to listen to coaches and meet people. And it's just like a big networking thing, really. Right then and there, when I did that program, I was like, yes, like this is it. This is what I want to do. I'm going to try to be a GA and just kind of work my way there. I had thoughts about being a high school coach earlier on in my college career. But as it got to the end, I was like, you know, I want to go try to be a GA and pursue my career in the collegiate level.
So correct me if I'm wrong, because a lot of people ask this, when you're a graduate assistant, that pretty much means is that you are working on your master's degree while still coaching, correct?
That's correct. And that's how most of your, you know, you get paid through getting your school paid for, per se.
So. Right. So that's just the thing. It's not just all the hours that you have to put in as a coach. You're also putting a ton of hours in still going to school, because clearly a master's degree, a little bit more difficult than an undergrad. So yeah, I mean, that's got to be something you probably knew you were signing up for, but then the realization probably hit you, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to coach. I get to, you know, rebound and, you know, do whatever it is I get to do. And then, oh yeah, I got to go home and write a paper. You know, it's just that part of it. I'll be honest with you. School's not my best asset, you know.
Just, you're preaching to the choir now, kid.
So, you know, going home writing that paper wasn't the fun, you know, the best part of my day, but it's just something you gotta do, unfortunately. And I still, you know, I still don't have my master's. I'm like 3 classes or 4 classes short. So I do plan on finishing that at some point.
Okay, so we'll get to that. But you start out your first coaching opportunity as a GA is at Morehead State University. Yeah. Talk about catching on there with head coach Greg Todd, relatively close to home. So it's close enough that you can drive home on weekends and sure. Still be with your Thomas More friends, because I'm sure a lot of those girls are still playing for the Saints at the time. Yeah. So you still want to be dialed into that.
Absolutely, yeah. Coach Todd, to this day, I'm so grateful that he gave me the opportunity to do that, because it's not very often that D3 kids get D1 GA jobs, you know. So I was, you know, very thankful that he knew who I was, and that I knew a couple people that, you know, knew him, helped me get that job. He gave me the, you know, the first opportunity to get a real taste in this profession. And so, you know, I was so grateful for it, because that was the team that I got to be a part of. That was one of the best teams in Morehead State history. You know, we went to the WNIT and got to knock off Ohio State in the first round. And
they had Kelsey Mitchell too, right? Probably one of the best players. Or is she already out by then?
She was out. She
okay,
was out.
But still a pretty good program nonetheless.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's cool when, you know, Morehead State can go play Ohio State and get a W. So that whole experience taught me a lot. And really it just taught me a lot about the background side of it. I never really knew how much goes into making a program operate in terms of buses, meals, gear. The list goes on and on. And I was kind of, that was my role, just to get all the behind the scenes stuff done. But also, you know, Coach Todd was really good at letting me, you know, get into workouts and, you know, coaching the girls a little bit and getting hands-on with scouting reports. And I'm really thankful for that because sometimes head coaches are really wary about whether they let GAs do that. But he let me just go in there and do my thing right away. So I really appreciate him for that.
Sure, got a lot of great hands-on experience. And then it's time to move on and you go to Shawnee State, mm-hmm. NAIA level. And the ironic part about you going there, and that's, of course, in Portsmouth, Ohio, the ironic part is from the time you had left Thomas More till that current point, which was the beginning of last season as we're talking, the 2019-2020 season, Thomas More moves from NAIA, and they go into the Mid-South Conference, which is exactly where Shawnee State is already located. So out of nowhere, you're going to play your alma mater twice a year. And you guys, and it's a transition for them. That's huge to go from, a lot of D3 players still at Thomas More, playing on the NAIA level, scholarship basketball. So obviously they're behind the eight ball, at least to start. And then here comes the prodigal's daughter, so to speak, back into that. And they want to cheer you. They want to give you a warm reception. At the same time, they don't want your team to come in there and beat them. Mm-hmm. And well, that kind of is what happened, right? So that had to be nice, right?
It was nice. I am a competitor. I'm a ferocious competitor. I want to win at everything, but it was weird.
Yeah, I bet.
Sitting on the other, the other bench and coaching against, a program that gave me so much. Yeah, it's weird. But, I was going back to Thomas More that day. I was more nervous than any game I had ever played in my entire life, just because, it was my scout. I was trying to prepare the
kids. Was that done on purpose? Would that have been your scout? Or did they say, okay, you should know all these kids, we'll go ahead and let you be the one to come up with it? Because clearly another coach could have done that scout that day, but.
That might have had something to do
with it. Of course, the folks that don't know, when it's the assistant coach is the one who watches the tape and comes up with a scouting report. And pretty much says, here, coach, this is how, this is what they do. Here's how we could beat them or exploit it or whatever. And because, like you said, the head coach has so much going on. Coaching basketball is only a small part of what they do. They're a CEO of a corporation, basically. So folks like you take care of all those kind of things. So to be able to come up with that scouting report, that had to be bittersweet at best, right?
Yeah, and you know what? People were like, oh, well, they won because they had Abby on the other side. They knew, they knew the plays, yada, yada, yada. Well, yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. Coach Hans, he's changed stuff around a lot, mm-hmm. Things are different than when I played. Different play calls, different ways he runs things, So it wasn't like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what they're going to do, when they're going to do it. I can read Coach Hans's mind. Like, no, that was not what it was. I had to scout just like I scouted everybody else. So happened we were able to get the win. So it was a good feeling. I can't deny that.
Yeah, and it's tough for Thomas More in that first year and all their sports is that I don't think the women's program had lost a game at home in like 9 years. And I don't know if it was your game that snapped that streak or one earlier, because they did suffer, I think, 2 losses at home, but still to be a part of that, at least you came away with the dub. So we can at least say, okay, they can have that because they got one of our people over there, right? That's how I'm going to justify it, at least. Coach Hans probably not so much.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's all good.
I've only lost one game in that building, and that was the one I played in, so I had to keep the streak going. So
That's right, and that's how we'll remember it. Remember that history is always written by the winners, and you've been the winner so far when it comes to that.
yeah, for sure.
All right. So finish up with Shawnee State. And, of course, that was the year. It's still kind of the year. Of course, we're trying to make this as evergreen as possible. But your guys' season was shut down just like everybody else's with the COVID-19. And you guys had a chance to make a nice run and didn't get to do that. You at least went to the conference tournament, I believe, before things got shut down, correct? And then it was the national tournament that was actually shut down on the NAIA level. That had to be a real gut punch for you guys and everyone involved. And I know we've heard everybody's stories, but this is your platform. Abby. So what was it like for you and your team to go through that kind of heartbreak?
I just hated telling our players, just to see the disappointment on their face. And like we legit had a real shot to go win it, you know. Two of the four teams in our pod we had already played before in the season. And so, you know, those scouts were already done in a sense, you know, so we just had to kind of follow up and make changes and see what we can do better for this next time, you know. So we were ready to go, and just seeing our kids' faces, especially our seniors that had to, you know, end their season like that, it was heartbreaking. Gosh, I just remember, you know, Bailey coming, she was our senior point guard, and I just remember no one said anything at all, but she was started bawling, crying, because she just knew what it was. And I was like, for me, that broke my heart, because you know how much they put into it. But the message I tried to convey to them at the end of the year was they got to end their season on a win. And that's not something that a lot of teams get to do. You know, they all got to win a conference championship that year. So, you know, there's some silver lining in there somewhere, but it was awful. And I wish there could have been a way we could have tried to play at least, but I understand that the health and safety of everybody is what really is important. So.
Yeah. Especially then when nobody really knew what they were going up against in those early days of it. Now, of course, as a young coach, you're going to find yourself kind of bouncing from job to job to job, and it's just kind of the nature of it. So after Shawnee State, you were able to be hired Division I now, Bellarmine University. And of course, you guys officially became a Division I institution sometime in the summer, like July 1st or whatever. But you were hired probably before then. And of course, a lot of my people that I know from Northern Kentucky University remember Bellarmine from the GLVC days. Big time rivalry with Northern Kentucky, and your head coach that hired you, Chancellor Dugan, a legend in the GLVC. You know, most people really remember her at Southern Indiana, where she took a team led by Leanne Freeland and Randy Gatling, national runner up after they had never won, never come close to winning. And she put together a group that goes on a magical run. And that ends up getting her a job in Division I at Florida Atlantic before returning back to the GLBC at Bellarmine. Clearly, what I'm getting at is she was a fantastic player, great coach, and talk about a learning tree that you can sit underneath every day. First of all, tell me how you got the opportunity for her to hire you, and just talk about working with her on a day-to-day basis.
When I was at Thomas More, we used to come down and scrimmage Bellarmine every year as like a preseason scrimmage. You know, at the time I knew I wanted to kind of be a college coach. Like I was still kind of like, oh, do I want to do high school or college? But, you know, one of the big things is networking, getting your name out there. So I went up, made sure at every scrimmage, I went up, you know, shook her hand, got her phone number, got Coach Litton's phone number, who's you know, the assistant here now. And just really just stayed in touch with them, you know, through all this time. When they figured out they were going D1 and had to hire, you know, a staff, she called me and I was like, you know, I had to take it. And I thought that was so cool that just through that little connection we had of scrimmaging and staying in touch over the years that she thought of me to be on her staff and to come work for her and help her through this transition period. And so I'm so grateful that she chose me.
Yeah, I don't know. I know you've been at Knights Hall. I don't know if you've ever been there for a game. One of the neatest gyms I've ever been in. I love the fact how the stage is on one side of the end zone. And they redid the floor a few years ago, and that looks like a top-notch facility now. It was pretty quaint. It was pretty Division II for a long time. Yeah. But I don't know if you've ever been there for a game, but the atmosphere at Knights Hall can really be electric. I'm sure you're looking forward to finally getting to do that here hopefully this winter when we can get back to playing basketball again.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I haven't experienced that yet, but, you know, just Googling pictures and seeing, you know, some of the pictures that are hanging in Knights Hall of what the crowd looks like, you know, that's pretty cool. And it's definitely motivating for sure. Hopefully we get the opportunity to do that. And I'm confident that we'll have a season. I just hope that we can have some spectators too. I don't know how that'll go yet, but I hope so, because it looks pretty electric, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, there's no sense in speculating about all that stuff, but at some point there will be fans. We don't know when, so it's futile to try to figure it out. But let's go back one more thing. In your playing career, over the summer, it was announced the all-decade teams came out, and for the Division III level, there was three Thomas More Saints, and you were one of them, and that had to be a big thrill. And what was even better is that the other two who were named, Sidney Moss and Madison Temple, your career overlapped the two of theirs. So you were able to play with them, and all three of you have this bond together through hanging banners and all America awards and national championships. And I know that it's not about, you're going to probably tell me it's not about individual accolades, but it definitely feels good. Tell me when you, how you were informed that you were part of the all-decade team, because it's one thing to be an All-American. That's awesome. It's one thing to be conference player of the year, but all-decade team, there's a special ring to that. Is that true?
Yeah. I was kind of like shocked per se, just because, you know, I got an email from the gentleman that selects, you know, the teams or whatever. So when I got that email, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. You know? And like you said, I played with both Sydney and Madison, and we were all on the same team at one point. So when I found out and then found out that they were, you know, on it too, it just made me so excited, because we were teammates, you know, we did things together. We won national titles together. and I know you're trying to make me comment on myself, but like I was just so excited for them and that we did it together. And we wouldn't have been up there if it wasn't for our teammates that helped us get there, for Coach Hans for selecting us to be a part of his team. And so I'm sorry, I can't sit up here and talk about myself without talking about them. So
well, that's fair, because obviously they were a big part of that. Without them, you know, you couldn't have achieved what you achieved, and without you, they probably couldn't achieve what they achieved. So that's very selfless of you. And I wasn't trying to, you know, have you say how great you are, but you know, you can take some credit every once in a while, because we all watched you play. We all knew that you earned, you know, the recognition that you've deserved. And I'm sure there's more of that to come further on down the line, because you're still a young lady. I mean, there's still, you know, you still got a lot to accomplish, but as a player, for sure, you know, you definitely had an outstanding career. I hope you understand that.
Thank you. Yeah. I get reminded of that every time I come home to my dad's house in Independence, because I walk in my kitchen and like my jersey's hung up, you know, I got All-American plaque there, you know, All-American plaque there. It's in my kitchen, you know, so I just.
That is a little much, but hey, you know, if you're going to downplay it, then it's okay for him to overplay it, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, but, you know, the one thing that I am proud of is that I was able to make my family proud, and my mom, who's looking down. So I was able to use basketball as my platform to make my family proud and do what I love. So I'm so thankful for it.
Well, Abby, it's been a joy to sit down and talk to you and relive your career. And like I said, you've got a lot more of the story to write. So maybe further on down the line, we'll have the coaching career of Abby Owings. What is your goal coaching wise? Do you look to be a head coach somewhere, or is it too early to tell? Cause you're just now your third year out of college. I mean, you still got a long ways to go. I mean, you might think you're old, but you got a long way to go. Trust me.
It feels like it some days, I'm not going to lie.
Well, yeah, you know, you're dealing with college kids now. And now, you know, all the things that you put coaches through is now in reverse. So that's kind of the progression of life, correct?
Amen. I got these like weird bag things under my eyes. No, I don't get it. No. But back to your question, you said, what was
like, what's your long-term goals as far as coaching? I mean, you looking to be a head coach at some point, maybe go back down to high school at some point? I mean, what do you want to do as far as coaching-wise long-term?
Well, I think when you're a young coach, it's hard to, you know, your mind bounces everywhere. Like, oh, yeah, and, you know, I want to be here. I want to be here. And definitely when I was a GA at Moorhead, that's the way I thought. You know, I was like, oh, I want to be a head coach by 26, whatever it was that I was thinking at the time. But more and more each day, I'm just understanding the value of being where my feet are, and doing the best job that I can at this job. And then the next one will come, whatever time period that is or whatever day that is. I really enjoy being an assistant coach and really learning, you know. And you know, make a comment on Coach Dugan right here for a second, because, you know, there's days where I just sit in her office and I just listen and I don't say anything. And it's just because, like, I'm so wowed at so much, at how much experience that she has and just the things that she comes up with and the ways that she thinks. And, you know, she might think that I'm just quiet sometimes, but I'm just listening. You know, I just enjoy listening and learning. Right now, I'm just trying to be where my feet are. You know, I enjoy being an assistant. I think one day that I will try to take the chance to be a head coach whenever that day comes. But for right now, I enjoy being at Bellarmine and being an assistant under Coach Dugan.
All right, Abby, it's been my pleasure to spend a little over an hour with you. And, you know, I know you don't have much time as an assistant coach, so you carve out some time. It was really outstanding. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brady. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Abby Owings for being my guest today on this episode of Nobody Safe, the Brady Labor Podcast. If you saw Abby play, you know that she was tenacious, fearless, and an intense competitor. Plus, she has an infectious personality that draws people to her, and those are all qualities that will lead her to success, not only in the coaching business, but whatever she chooses to do in the game of life. If you want to follow Abby on Twitter, you can do so. It's at Coach Abby O, and she spells Abby A-B-B-Y. And you can follow Abby's team, Bellarmine, on their official athletics Twitter account, at B-U-Nights. If you enjoyed this episode of Nobody's Safe, I'd appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating, because every little bit helps. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so that Nobody's Safe automatically downloads to your favorite listening device. Nobody's Safe is a proud member of the Stoveleg Media Podcast Network. For more information on the other podcasts on the network, or if you want to start your own podcast, just go to the website, stoveleg.com, for more information. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at BradyLabor1. That's Brady Labor, L-A-B-E-R, the number one. I'd really appreciate the follow. And if you have a question for the show, feel free to do that by using the hashtag NobodySafe. Or check out our new website at NobodySafe.fireside.fm. Until next time, this is Brady Labor saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on Nobody's Safe.